So we're at a point where we've made the decision to turn our will and our life over the care of God. I at this point admitted that I need to change my thinking and that I was incapable of changing anything without God's help. The position I'm taking is what the third step is, the position where He is the principal, we are the agent. He is the father, we are the child. I need Him to direct my life, and I'm making a decision. We validate that position with the third step prayer, right? We validate that new position. I offer myself to Thee to do with me and build with me. Do what You want. Leave me the bondage of me. Take away my difficulties so I can bear witness to Your power, Your love, and Your way of life. You know, and let me be that. And in my experience, nothing has changed yet, but I've surely validated the fact that I am going to make an attempt to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And I love the timeline that Bill says, right? Now. Now. Not next week, not next month, not a year from now. Now. We make an effort to be rid of the things that are blocking us. The next words used at once. You know, now and at once means, to me, get up off your friggin' knees and start writing. You know, that's what that means to me. That doesn't mean wait or do anything. Just go. Move on. Right? We got to get down to causes and conditions. There'll be little permanent effect, little or no permanent effect of this decision I just made unless at once, followed by an effort to be rid of these things that have been blocking me. Alcohol was but a symptom. Alcohol's not my problem. Alcohol's my solution. I got to get down to causes and conditions. And it's now we need to see if that's true. What they said in the third step is true. Is that true? Face the facts, see if it's true. And my experience, my transformation, my personality changes, it says in the appendix. The personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. A spiritual awakening, a spiritual experience. Either one is effective. You have this personality change. By the way, my favorite definition is Carl Jung. Talking to Roland Hazard, right? Roland Hazard goes to Zurich, Switzerland to see Sigmund Freud, who's not there, thank God. You know? I mean, he's off doing cocaine somewhere, I guess. You know? But, you know, our lives held in the balance, by the way, and he falls prey to Carl Jung, who's a believer. Right? Thank God he falls in Carl Jung's hands. God is present, invoked or not. Right? Spends a year there. What's he say? I had such a profound knowledge of the inner workings of my mind that a drink was unthinkable. Doesn't even make it back to the ship. Right? I mean, that's my guy right there. You know, he goes to Paris to see a friend of his care. His friend asks him the wrong question. Right? Want a drink? And he celebrates his recovery. Goes back to Jung. I love that story, man. I just love it. He goes back. Yeah, I don't know what. What the hell's on? What's going on? And he says, look, I misdiagnosed you. I thought you were nuts. I thought you had mental issues. It's way worse. You're an alcoholic. You know? And I've never seen anybody recover like us. Right? That was rare. It was a lightning strike. That's what William James, right? It's like a lightning strike. It happens so infrequently. It's like a lightning strike when one of you guys recovers. But here and there, once in a while, I've seen these spiritual experiences take place. You know, love it. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes that were once the guiding force of these men and women replaced by a whole new set of conceptions. If we could change our thinking, our attitudes, and our emotions, our lives would change. And my experience is as soon as I started that fourth step, and real quick, just the real mechanics of it. We use a five-column inventory. I can show you where those five columns are in the big book. You know, four-column, five-column, I don't care what you use. Just write, you know. We see three, and then we see two on a couple pages later. You know, the other two columns. You know, we go top to bottom for a reason. We want an inventory. We don't want to relive it. We're going to relive it in five. You know, but as soon as I started writing, the transformation started. I don't know what happens from the head to the arm to the pen to the paper. I don't know what makes it different when it leaves here and gets there. But damn it, it looks different. You know, there's no longer justification. Who am I pissed off at? My ex-wife, my current wife, my ex-wife, same person, right? the police, the IRS, the courts, her lawyer, my father. You know, why? She had me arrested. She took the house. She took my son. Why the police arrested me? The IRS, they took my money. I found out later it was their money. But they took my money at the time. Her lawyer. I'm having to pay her lawyer to sue me. My father left when I was 5, assaulted my mother. Never paid any child support. Deadbeat. And it all comes down to those instinctual drives again, right? What part of me was affected? Because it's all about me. It's all about me. How was I affected? I don't see what's going on in their lives. I just am interested in how am I affected. Did it affect my social instinct, my security instinct, my sex instinct? Bill says one of those instincts has to be affected for me to be pissed off. Did it affect how people think of me? Of course it did. I was arrested in front of my neighbors and in front of my children. I was embarrassed. Did it affect my security instinct? Oh, yeah. Took my house. I got to pay child support. I got to pay alimony. Affect my sex instinct? Well, I wasn't getting any of that after that. That's for sure. Police, they arrested me. You could easily see what was affected. What people think of me. What I think of myself. My security instinct, that's going to follow me. That arrest record is going to follow me now. Now I got an assault and battery charge on my record. A violent charge. Her lawyer. I mean, that's obvious. My security instinct was affected. My father was tricky. Everything was affected with my father. My ability to have healthy relationships was affected. My security instinct was affected as a child. My future was affected. But it's funny, as soon as you see it on paper, I didn't even have to get to the fourth column, the responsibility column it talks about. What did I do to set this ball rolling? Putting out of our minds anything they did, what did I do? Take responsibility. We took their inventory, now take ours. Really, that's what we're doing, right? The first three columns is taking their inventory, not ours. And as soon as I start looking at myself, the transformation starts to take place. I go, holy shit, this is all my fault. She had you arrested because you assaulted her. She took the house because she was trying to protect her children. She took custody of your son because you're not capable of raising him. You're an alcoholic. You're an addict. The police arrested you because they were called to the scene. It wasn't, let's go get Pat tonight. Let's go screw with Pat tonight. They were called. It was a 911 call. They had to respond. The IRS, like I said, you don't pay your taxes, they contact you. It takes them a while. They get around to it, though. My father was tricky. I don't own his behavior. I don't condone his behavior, but I own the freaking resentment. I own that. And I love what the fourth step says. We start to look at life from a different angle. As soon as we start this process, something happens, something changes, at least in me. And I start to look at the core defects of character. I start to look at the tools that I'm using to navigate life. They look like this: dishonesty, inconsideration, selfishness, fear. They look like those are the tools that I'm using to satisfy these instinctual drives. Those are my tools in life to navigate. We go to the seven deadly sins, right? Pride, anger, greed, gluttony, lust, envy, sloth. We go down that whole row. Those are my tools. That's what's guiding my behavior. Right? That's how I satisfy my needs. I use those tools. And I start to look at things differently. I love the sick man prayer. I love the four-step prayer. Just say, we look at them now as sick people as we are. Right? Like everybody is going through something we know nothing about. Everybody is struggling with something we know nothing about. The people that I think are the perpetrators are suffering from something I know nothing about. And I start to wonder what is going on in their lives. Wonder what's causing them to react. I get how I'm bringing out the worst in everybody that's on my doorstep. That's obvious. I get where I need to take responsibility for that. I am the perpetrator. I'm not the victim anymore. I'm bringing out the worst in everybody. In my need to satisfy those instincts, I'm bringing out the worst in everybody. And I start to see the truth in that, and I start to get relief, and I start to feel the presence of God. First time in my life ever. Charlie says it the best. He says, it's like a storeroom that's full of resentment and fear and anger and guilt and remorse and shame. And as soon as you start to remove some of that crap and replace it with good stuff, the sunlight starts to shine. You know? We get rid of that resentment and we replace it with love and patience and tolerance and understanding. We start to look at it from a different angle. Even though it might be justified, that's the worst, right? The 12-12-12, that's the worst. When your anger is justified. When they really did rip you off. You know? When you get a customer who just doesn't pay you. You know? You somebody who just attacks you for no reason. Well, you really have a right to be pissed off. But I don't have the luxury. I have the right, but I don't have the luxury. Because resentment kills. That's Bill's words. The number one offender. Kills more alcoholics than anything else. I can't afford to be in conflict. I have to find a way to be in harmony with the world and with the people in it. Conflict kills me. That internal condition kills me. That internal condition is what's driving me to the drink. It's no longer about drinking a drug. It's about behavior that is creating this internal condition. And if I can change the behavior that's creating this internal condition, I could recover. I could find a way to be in harmony with this world. And that's really what it's become about me. I don't do conflict. I don't do conflict well. I just don't do it well. I don't handle it well. I can't handle it. My solution has always been take a drink, medicate. And immediately I start to get some relief. God starts to enter my heart. I sense some sunlight. I start looking at people different. We were sitting at Bonefish Max in Sample Road about a year ago, my wife and I, and the waitress comes by and throws the menus on the table and just keeps walking, right? And I'll tell you, at first I go, what the fuck? You know, like, what the hell? Manager! You know, I mean, that's what goes through my head. And I look at my wife and I go, I wonder what's going on in her life. That's looking at life from a different angle. That's a spiritual experience. That's a personality change. Wait, I got chilled. That's a personality change sufficient to recover from this shit. And I asked her when she came back, are you okay? And she said, it's been one of them days. I said, sit down. And she sat with us. I said, tell us about it. And she started sharing what was going on in her day. And we started talking. And she got up with a smile on her face. Right? And we looked at each other and we were smiling. Best service I've ever had. Right? Best waitress I've ever had. That's the effect this spiritual awakening has on other people. That's the effect that this spiritual experience. That's just a small example of what goes on in my life. I dictate most of the people around me's behavior. Karma. Energy. I'm a big energy guy. I'm a big Rhonda Burns. Anybody read Rhonda Burns? The Secret? I love The Secret. I bring out the worst in you, or I can bring out the best in you. And I deal with my customers all day long. It's how I greet them at the door, which dictates the relationship we're going to have, which determines whether this job is going to be a success or not. Because it's all about relationships. It's not about the work. It's about the relationship. I can fuck up the work. And if the relationship's good, they'll go, okay, fix it. You know? Just make it right. Have a great day, man. See you tomorrow. You know? But if I answer that door, like, what the hell took you so long to get to the door? You know? I ring that bell and I'm, Jesus. You know? I got shit to do. You know? Thanks for answering the door. You know? That relationship goes right to freaking. I could do the best job ever, but they ain't going to be happy. They ain't going to be happy. They'll call in. That guy's a prick. You know? I keep forgetting this is a spiritual retreat. I got to watch my language. We're all men here, right? We start to have the transformation. The fear is the same thing, right? I don't know if anybody's on a fear inventory here, but my fear inventory, 99% of it was imagined. 99% of it wasn't here right now. It was out there or back there. That stuff, I'm scared to death that what happened in the past is going to happen again. That's why I'm so guarded. We talked about that with the relationship thing, right? We talked about that yesterday. And so I'm going to be guarded because I got hurt on that last relationship. I'm not all in on this one because they all run. They all lie. They all cheat because I'm a liar and a cheater. We were talking about that. The punishment of the cheater is you can't trust anybody. Punishment of the liar is you can't believe anybody. You assume everybody cheats because you're a cheater. None of my fear. That's Paradoxville that we live in, right? I'm afraid of life and death. Yeah. I'm afraid I'm never going to get a job. And then you get the job. I think I'm going to lose this job, right? I'm afraid I'm always going to be alone. And then we get into a relationship. I'm scared to death that they're going to leave. You know, this constant fear that we live in. This inability to trust. As soon as I got it on paper, I went, oh my God, this is like, none of this is real. Couple of them. You know, maybe you have health issues. I don't know. That's real stuff. Most of it, that fourth column, my responsibility, I don't trust God. I won't turn my will and my life over in this particular area. I'm going to choose where I'm going to do that. You know, I can't be all in. As soon as I see the truth in that, I start to get relief. 95% of that stuff, as soon as I look at it, it just drops off. And I start to get free. The relationship inventory, and we call it a sex inventory in the book, but I'm talking about a relationship inventory. I always like to tell my guys, pursuit of sex, in pursuit of sex. Because you can hurt people without having sex with them. And I don't want a list of everybody you had casual sex with. Who did you hurt in pursuit of sex? In pursuit of a relationship, who did you hurt? Because I could not have sex with somebody and hurt my wife just by flirting. I could go on a porn site and hurt my wife without having sex with anybody but myself. And I'm not judging you guys, by the way. I'm not doing that. You get to do that yourself, right? Deep down within every one of us is the fundamental idea of God. You know right from wrong. It's right here. I don't have to tell you that. Hey, I wasn't the only one on the site. It's a $50 billion industry. I didn't spend that kind of money. I wasn't the only one, you know. And I'm not judging you. I mean, if it sits well with you and you're not in a relationship and it's not hurting anybody, you know, if you're sitting at home with your pants on the floor all day, I'd take a look at it, you know. And then we look at other people, you know, shoplifting, student loans. You know, we're trying to clean off our side of the street. I'm trying to look at the nature of my wrongs, you know. We look at that kind of stuff. Hit and runs, I have a few of them. I left the Derby Lounge one night and sideswiped the whole city block, you know, that needed to be on there, you know. Those are the nature of my wrongs. I need to look at the truth about the people I've harmed. Yeah. And I tell you, I started to get relief right there. I'll tell you what scared me more than anything was five. Who do I trust? Who do I trust with this? Who do I trust with my secrets? And there was a couple of them that were on there that I didn't want to share with anybody. You know, and as much as I owe Brian my life, I didn't trust him. And that's why gossip kills in these rooms, by the way. You know, we used to sit at Denny's and talk about them people in the rooms. You know, stop it. Don't do it. My rule is if they're not there, we don't talk about them. You know, if they're there, then we'll talk about them. But if they're not there, we're not going to talk about them. You know, I didn't trust you because I heard you talking about other people. I'm going to share my fifth step with you, and then you're going to share it at Denny's. We're not going there, you know. So I was holding off. I held back on my fifth step. So I had this tough love men's group that I was part of called the Boca Boys Club. They were in Deerfield, and they were a bunch of old men. I don't know where they got the name. But they were like this tough love. They were these in-your-face guys, you know what I mean? Like, you pull your phone out in this meeting, they stop the freaking meeting. They'd tell you, take that shit outside. They'd stop you right there, right? It was a topic meeting. If you started talking about your relationship, they'd stop. Oh, we'll get with you before the meeting or after the meeting. We're going to talk about this right now. I mean, they were those guys. If you were chairing that meeting, you had a collar on. That's why I have a collar on. Because these guys, you did not show up in a t-shirt if you were at the podium. Or they wouldn't let you chair. I mean, I'd say, what's the difference? They said, the difference is you can't chair. I gave him the finger. I left. You know, came back the next week with a collar. Can you chair? Can I chair? Yeah, go ahead. You got a collar. That was their thing, man. They were, you know what? And I thought they were picking on me. What they were doing was trying to teach me to follow some simple freaking directions for the first time in my life, you little brat. You know, that's the way they talk. Listen, you little brat. We have rules here. If you don't like it, there's 300 and some meetings in Broward County. Go find another. They weren't afraid to hurt my feelings. But I want to tell you this. If you wanted to talk about other stuff, you came to the dinner before the meeting at D'Amico's Italian restaurant next to Home Depot in Boca, you didn't have to have any money. We got there an hour and a half, 2 hours before the meeting, and you could dump all your shit right there on the table. And it was just one of their meetings. You guys probably have some of that stuff where everybody throws a 20, you know, and the waiter walks away with a $100 tip, you know, and everybody gets fed. You know, it's just that kind of deal. And they would stay till 1 in the morning after the meeting if you wanted to talk about your wife again, you know. But during the meeting, you weren't going to do it. You were going to talk about recovery. And they taught me how to show up in AA. Old Bud Reichardt. Do you remember Bud Reichardt?
No.
He taught me some stuff. Throw his cigarettes on the table. Son of a bitch. Don't tell me you're grateful. Show me you're grateful. Gratitude's an action word. He would throw stuff out like that, you know. Like, just an ornery old guy. But loved him. Loved him. I knew what he was trying to do, you know. So I'm doing this. I need to do this fifth step. They're on my ass, Pat. When are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? So I decided that I'm raised Catholic. A priest can't share it, you know. By law, he's not supposed to be able to share it, you know. So I'm gonna call St. Andrew's Church, and I call it 11 o'clock at night, thinking nobody will answer the phone. And Father Quinn picks up the phone. And it's St. Andrew's, and I said, Father, I'm in recovery. Oh, and you want to do a fifth step? You know? I didn't know, but the Coral Springs group had been meeting there for years. And Father Quinn knew if you were an alcoholic what you wanted. You know, and I spent 2.5 hours with Father Quinn the next morning, and my life forever changed. I cannot even, you know, how do we explain a spiritual experience? You know, how do you tell somebody how that feels? You have to experience that. How do you tell somebody what a flower smells like? How do you tell somebody what water feels like? You know, you've got to experience it. And it's just, I left that office for the first time in my life free. Free. 2.5 hours later, I was free. I mean, I never felt that before. That guy that I shared last night that talked about a light beyond his wildest dreams that was in AA without a car and a relationship, that's what he was talking about. He wasn't talking about the outside. He was talking about this. He was talking about freedom. Freedom from this. For the first time in my life, I was at peace. I saw the world different. That fifth step promises are awesome, man. And what you're talking about, that some people have it at 3. Some people have it at 5. I had it at 5. Some people have it at 9. Some people have it as a result of living 10, 11, and 12. At 5, the world came on a different view. I looked at the world different. I felt God. God went from here to here. God went from a thought to a feeling. I got what the book promised. The central fact of my life that day became God. That's the central fact of my life today. And I love what Russell says. What are you thinking about right now? That's the central fact of your life. What do you think about the most? Who is she? You know? That's the central fact of your life. I walk with God today. I'm a big Brother Lawrence fan, man. I love Brother Lawrence. Walk with God. You don't have to take time to pray to God. Walk with Him. Pray all the time. Pray continuously. Yeah, you can set aside time for prayer and meditation if you want, but why not bring Him everywhere you go? I do. Every job I'm on, every task I'm doing at work, constantly talking. I felt that day. I left that office and I'm looking at the flowers and the trees around it, and everything was fluorescent. And I've never heard that before, except Kim had the same experience I just found out recently. And Marty Mann, first woman ever to stay sober, writes about that same experience. that everything looked different. The flowers were bright red, bright yellow. I'm going back to work and I'm looking around again. These freaking trees are everywhere, you know? And I realized I had been looking at asphalt and bumpers my whole freaking life. I had been walking with my head down, looking at the ground, and I never saw any of the beauty in this planet. None of it. All I could think about, I didn't even give you a head bob when you walk by me. I didn't look up to see anybody around me. I'm sitting at a light. I'm looking at the yellow light, because when that goes yellow, this is going green. I got shit to do. You know, you could have passed away in the car beside me. I'd have never seen it. Never acknowledged anybody or anything. Just focused on me and what I need to do when I get done here. I'm going home that night. I see my first, I'm looking at this beautiful sunset. And I go to the lady at the toll booth at Sawgrass. I said, look at that. She said, what? Look at that. And she goes, yeah, it's there every night. I had been driving that road for 12 years. I never saw it. I never saw it. That's what this program promises. That's the freedom. Now, how do you keep it? How do you keep it? Because now I got to leave the house. Now I got to go back to work. Now Bill puts in two steps called the tools of change. Right? Now I better change. I've seen the truth. I'm aware now that I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, I'm driven by fear, self-pity, self-delusion. I see the truth in it. I see the tools that I'm using to navigate life. Now what do I do about it? How do I stop it? How do I change it? Two of the shortest paragraphs in the book, I believe probably the most important paragraphs in the book. Everything leads there. Everything leads there. Everything leads back there. It's all, I think our steps pyramid right there. The steps that separate the men from the boys. Now you know what's wrong. You know what the problem is. What are you going to do about it? And I think Bill used two paragraphs for a simple reason. I think it is that easy, right? I mean, it's that simple. Stop doing what you shouldn't do and start doing what you should do. Right? Stop lying. Start telling the truth. Stop being unselfish. Or stop being selfish. Start being unselfish. Stop making your decisions based on fear. It's just not easy. Because those muscles are strong. I've been navigating life for a long time with those muscles. With those selfish muscles. And I get something out of them. I get something out of them. Those instinctual drives that give me pleasure, they're asking me to bring them into where God intended them to be in the first place. Reel them in. Reel them in. And I really want to. I am willing, what Steph says. I am now willing. I don't know if I'm ready. And I didn't know if there was that much distance between willing and ready. Because I'm willing. When I get up in the morning, I ask God. I do a third step prayer every morning. I just love that prayer. My favorite prayer. Just get me out of the way. I'm yours. Use me. Let me be your witness. You know? Let me represent AA. You know? And then I get in traffic. Right? I got to merge. You know? Or somebody comes up against one of those instinctual drives, right? Somebody comes up against my reputation. Somebody badmouths me, right? I get into a position where I'm going to be judged. I'm late for work. Why are you late? Oh, I caught traffic. No, I didn't. I got up late. But I'm not going to say that. Right? And I lie. Because right? I don't want you to think less of me. But I'm aware of it. I am aware of it. I walk away from that conversation and go, shit, you just lied. Try not to do that. The next time I'm late, what happened? I caught the bridge. I didn't catch the bridge. I got up late again. Now it really feels like shit. Damn it. Painfully aware of my character defects. Next time I'm late and they ask me, I go, and I walk away. I didn't say nothing, but I didn't lie. Kenny Kane, you remember Kenny Kane?
Yeah.
Kenny Kane was the bomb, wasn't he? I mean, Kenny Kane was doing a step series for us. I was probably 5 years sober. He might have been 17 years sober at the time, somewhere in that area. And he was doing a step series at the bottom line. And he opened the meeting on 6 and 7. And he said, when I came into AA, they told me I needed to shoplift less. You know? And I went, that son of a bitch is a thief. You know? I said, we got a thief doing the step series in our group. We need to call a group conscience here and get rid of this guy, right? Man, the long arm around Kenny nailed it, didn't he? He nailed it. Lie less. Cheat less. Right? Progress towards perfection. Right? We're never going to get there, but we're going to become better people along the way. Right? And at some point, it's going to become so objectionable that I'm going to ask God for help. Because I am incapable of reeling those instinctual drives in. I'm just incapable. We were just talking about that. I can't do my own taxes. It's spiritual freaking warfare. Is that dinner a write-off? Well, it could be. Yeah, but it wasn't. Yeah, but it could be. Yeah, but it wasn't. Why don't I trust the process? I give it to my accountant. So you figure it. Just do what you got to do. You know? Tell me how much I owe or how much I'm getting back. I don't want to know anything about it. You know? I'm incapable. Right? I'm incapable. I back out of the driveway. My stepdaughter comes and visits. She parks her caddy beside my truck. I don't know it's there. I back out of the driveway. I take the whole side of the car. Right? I'm on my, here's, and this is only a few years ago, right? I get out of the car, I go in the garage and get a plunger, right? I'm trying to get the freaking dent out of the side of the car, out of the door, right? Now I get some compound to get my green paint off of her freaking car, because maybe she did it in a parking lot, you know what I mean? Like, what the fuck is wrong with me? All I needed was a ski mask, you know what I mean? Like, I left. I'm on my way to Alcoholics of God to talk about spiritual principles. The warfare, Yoda on one shoulder, you know, do the right thing you must. You know, Vader's saying, fuck him. You know. I call her immediately. I hit your daughter's car. Just let me know what I owe. Boom. You know? But there was 10 minutes, 15 minutes there where I'm debating. Right? I wish I could tell you that's the only incident. You know? I got more stories. You know? But here's what's happening as I go further along the plane. I don't like the uncomfortableness in that feeling. I don't like being out of harmony. I don't like the conflict. So I'm willing to pay the price now to make that go away. I don't care what it is. I don't care how much it is. How much will I pay for freedom? Freedom from that. Freedom from the conflict. I can't put a value on it anymore. Just the other day, I had $800 here. You know, be happy. You know, I'm willing to pay it. I don't care about it right or wrong anymore. I don't want to play the game. Whose fault was the flood? Who cares? How do I make it go away? I could fight it and maybe win, but 3 months I'll be in conflict. I don't want the conflict in my life anymore. Don't want it. And you could go all those instinctual drives. You could go down the road. You know, the sex instinct, it's a driving freaking force. It's a driving force. I wish I could tell you I wasn't interested anymore. It's just not true. You know? And I can blow up my marriage and almost have blown up my marriage for a brief moment of pleasure on a freaking porn site. And I had to get busted to realize the harm I was causing. Because I'm thinking it's just only hurt me. No, it's not. I am incapable of reeling in those instinctual drives alone. And that's why the seventh step is there. Because when I'm ready, I'm going to say something like this. My Creator, please take all of me. It's a third step prayer in different words. It's just another third step prayer. You're mine. I'm yours. I'm yours. You do it. I can't do this. I'm incapable. I'm powerless over these defects. Please take them from me. Yes. I'm willing. I'm ready. They're too painful. I look at 6 and 7 like 1 and 2 on drinking and drug. I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol. Only God can remove the problem. Only God can solve that problem. I am powerless over my defects of character, and only God can solve that problem. But I got to be willing. You know, I've got, in cooperation with me and God, I've got to be willing to take the effort and then pray. I've got to be ready to have them removed and then ask for them to be removed. The step 6 of the 12 talks about an attitude of willingness. And then step 7 talks about with humility as your guide. My favorite definition in the 5th step. Clear recognition of exactly who and what I am now. This broken sinner that I am now. I'm clear, I recognize that. And with humility as my guide, knowing that, knowing who I am. With humility as my God, I go out from here to God and my fellows. But I need God's help. Bill talks, I love on page 100, as Bill Caesar, where he talks about the fudge, and I'll end with this because I know him right away. But he talks about, I got to go to the Wilson house, which in the Griffith house is next door where he was raised. And I'm looking out the window where he tells this story about looking at Mount Aeolus and wanting to climb that mountain and how cool it would be to accomplish that feat and look down on East Dorset from the top of Mount Aeolus. And his aunt, for his 4th birthday, brings a plate of fudge. And he's like, the fudge was so good that I forgot all about the mountain and chased that fudge for the rest of my life. And that just I tasted the fudge in early teens, and that's all I wanted was the fudge. I forgot it, but I wanted to be a baseball player. I was a high school baseball player. You know, I forgot all about my baseball player, my ambitions to be a baseball player. I forgot all about that, and I chased that fudge, you know, wherever it would show up. And then Bill talks about eventually overcoming the mountain. I eventually overcame the mountain. Right? He said, but remember, as we stumble to overcome the fudge, right? As we're stumbling up that mountain, the pain that it takes and the effort that it takes to get up that mountain to overcome it, don't forget to stop and look down and enjoy the view and realize how far we've come. You know, I am not the person who walked in. I'm not where I want to be, but I am nowhere near the person that walked in here. I have had a transformation as a result of these steps. I am not that selfish, self-centered, driven by self-pity, fearful kid that walked into these rooms. When I say kid, I was 36 freaking years old. I was a kid, a little brat. Not that person anymore. I am not defined anymore by one of anything. Not one action, not one decision, not one mistake does not define me anymore. I've learned to use those as tools to grow. You know, they're just opportunities to grow for me now. Bill talks about shooting the arrow towards perfection and aiming for it, knowing we're never going to get that. I love Paul, right? Successful living comes from daily dying. You know, just keep killing off that old self a little bit each day and creating this new self. I just want to be a better guy today than I was yesterday. Yes. You know, and it's just those baby steps. Just take us where we want to be. You know, my relationship with God is incredible today. But man, it's going to get even better. It's going to get even better. You know, I'm constantly looking to improve that conscious contact. And it's all about me. It's all about the elimination of these defects. And I think he kept 2 paragraphs because 10 is bringing us right back there. Right? Step 10 is bringing us right back to 6 and 7. You know? That's all.